This is West Southwest on WMUK. I'm Earlene McMichael. Coming up, Sevilla Man interviews Marte Cohn, a woman who served as a spy for the French army in Germany in the last months of World War II. But first, I interview Western Michigan University Title IX Director Felicia Crawford. The university has made some changes to how sexual assault complaints are investigated. The changes are part of a new sexual misconduct policy implemented last year. I ask, what's different between the old and new policies?
Well, we had several sexual misconduct policies in the past. So the provisions for faculty, staff, and students were all different. And what we did as of January 1st, 2015, is we now have one policy that's effective for all of our populations on campus. Another thing that has changed is that prior to January of last year, student-on-student sexual misconduct was handled in a student conduct office. And it was a different process. It involved a hearing panel. Now what will happen is if a complainant comes forward, they'll come to Institutional Equity and we'll work one-on-one with them in understanding the problem, understanding what happened, providing resources, providing interim measures, and then going forward with figuring out what witnesses we need to talk to and also talking to the respondent. So it's a little bit of a different process. But what we decided as a university is that all civil rights concerns should be brought to one office. And up until that point, faculty and staff were bringing other civil rights complaints to Institutional Equity, and it only made sense to also have student complaints come to Institutional Equity. So that's the difference. It's one very comprehensive policy that includes all faculty, staff, and students. It's very clear about what behaviors are prohibited, and it's also very clear about what the consequences are for if someone is found responsible for any of those behaviors. Another difference is that while we're conducting the investigation and determining whether or not there was a finding of responsibility in our office, we then take our finding, our decision, and give it to the appropriate office for sanctioning and discipline. So, for example, if it's a student-on-student issue, our finding of responsibility will go to student conduct, and student conduct would deliver sanctions from a warning all the way through expulsion. If it's faculty or staff, we'll follow the HR or the collective bargaining agreement in terms of how that's administered, but it's administered through those offices.
This might be a good time to make clear that the sexual assault complaint process that's moving to Institutional Equity.
Yes.
So it's out of the student affairs process and it's through the Office of Institutional Equity. What is that department?
Institutional Equity?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we look at really how can we ensure that everyone on our campus has opportunity and access. So that's for employment and for their educational endeavors. So that's what our office looks at globally for faculty, staff, and students.
So that people have an appreciation for how things have changed, that in the past, students who brought a complaint of sexual assault, they would have to appear before a hearing panel and face the person they accused.
Correct.
And one huge difference in this new process is they meet one-on-one with staff members. That said, can you kind of walk us through the process of once a student alleges sexual assault?
So the first step would be, we would hope that the person would report.
The correct place to report would be Institutional
Equity?
Would
be Institutional Equity.
And how do they do that? Is that something you do online? You have to do it in person? How does that work?
Either are possible. So someone could go online. We do have an incident report form online, and it allows a person to report something anonymously if they choose to do so. That makes it a little difficult for us to be able to follow up and to follow through on an investigation. However, that option is available. But someone could do the incident report form and include their name, and we would follow up and give them an email or call and ask them to come into our office to talk with us more. So they could do it online, but they can also just call our office and make an appointment. And also, if they were to bring forth their complaint to another office on campus, for example, if they went to the police or if it happened in a residence hall and they went to the residence hall staff, they all are very aware of Title IX and what the provisions are, and they would refer the person to our office. And that's actually how we get the majority of our complainants. They're coming through residence life and through the police because, again, we have that relationship where they understand that these students have Title IX rights, and our office is the one that would conduct the investigation.
But in cases where there has been actual penetration, is there rape kits or where would a student go?
Yes, and I actually want to take a few steps back. So prior to reporting, our first concern is that the student gets the care and support that they need. They may need medical care. So we would hope that they would get the medical care that they need. They may need counseling services. They may need crisis support. And so there are resources that are available on and off campus for that. And so offices on campus, as I mentioned, public safety and residence life are very much aware of those resources. So they will offer those resources as well. So we do have within Syracuse Health Center, we offer, of course, medical services there. There's also counseling services at Syracuse Health Center. And then we have the Fireplace, which is a peer education and a peer support center that's housed within Syracuse.
But how about a rape kit?
That service is provided in our community by the YWCA, and they're located downtown in Kalamazoo. And they have a certified nurse examiner who is trained in being able to collect evidence from a sexual assault. And so they have a process for that. They do it in a very trauma-informed manner. So they're aware of what the person has gone through and they understand how to approach this and they know how to collect the evidence. And that evidence is then saved at the YWCA for future use should that person decide to press charges criminally.
Is there any type of transportation to get that student there, or the student has to get there on their own?
The student could get there on their own, but I am aware of several instances where WMU police have taken our students to the YWCA.
While the case is being investigated, What happens in terms of housing, in terms of classes with the alleged perpetrator and the student? Do your policies on campus address that at all? In other words, if they live in the same dorm or if they're in the same classes, are the students separated or not?
Yes, they are. So what we're doing in that initial meeting with the student is we're trying to understand what happened. First of all, again, making sure that they have the care and support that they need and that they're safe. And part of that safety is understanding who is a perpetrator in this situation. And if it is a fellow student, where they live, are they coming into contact with that person in class? Maybe they don't live in the same residence hall, but the perpetrator often goes to the dining hall. And so they see the person there. So we ask those kinds of questions to understand if the person feels safe. And if they don't feel safe, then we do take interim measures by working with the residence hall, by working with instructors and the chairs to make some arrangements so that the two can be separated.
As far as Western's policy, do you automatically report things to the police?
That's a good question. A lot of people are very curious about that. And the way it actually works is that, and we can keep talking about students. You know, this applies to faculty and staff as well, but we can continue to talk about students. If a student brings forth a complaint to our office, they can at the same time bring that same complaint to the police, and they can have simultaneous investigations going on. So the police are looking at it from the criminal perspective as to whether or not charges should be pressed against this individual and if it should go forth criminally. We're looking at it from an academic setting standpoint. We're trying to understand whether or not this person is responsible for violating our sexual misconduct policy. And if so, again, we're passing it on to determine what level of sanctioning. This person could be expelled. They could get a warning. So it's two different processes. And another thing to note about that is there's two different evidentiary standards. So for the university process under Title IX, we have a preponderance of evidence standard. And what that means is that we're looking to see whether or not it's likely that this occurred, whether or not it's likely that this person is responsible. So anything more than 50% likelihood that it happened will have a finding of responsibility. Certainly with the criminal process, there's a much higher evidentiary standard for to go through that criminal process and have a finding of guilty. So two separate processes, they can go simultaneously, but also they can go, one can go first, the other can go second. So someone may go through the criminal process and decide, you know, I really want to go through the university process now. I'm ready to deal with this. I want to take this on through the university. Likewise, the opposite might be true. Someone might decide to come to the university first and they don't want to press charges criminally. Once the university process is complete down the road, they may say, you know what, I'm ready to go through the police. So really it's in the hands of the person who's experienced a sexual misconduct.
Is there such a policy on campus where faculty or staff are mandated to report?
Yes, there is. And that policy that I referenced that we went to as of January 1st of last year includes mandated reporters. And so faculty and quite a few staff, we have a listing in our policy, but I would say the majority of staff, including graduate assistants, have responsibility for reporting. And what that means is if they are made aware of a violation or a perceived violation, if they have a report of sexual misconduct, they need to let our office know or let a supervisor know or let the police know. Now, I do want to go back to something that you said as far as the police involvement. We do have requirements under Cleary to make sure that we report, you know, crime on our campus or adjacent to our campus. So there's that. There has to
when
be some reporting.
When you say reporting in the sense that you keep a statistic or that...
Statistical reporting of data.
Which is different than actually turning a case over.
It is.
Right?
It is. And so now there's another piece to this, though. And I just want to just kind of issue this caveat that if we have someone that we're working with and they're choosing not to go to the police on this, but we're finding that perhaps, just for example, there's a perpetrator, a respondent who has multiple victims on campus, there is a point in time when we have to say that we're going to need to step in and do something criminally to have some action taken. So I do want to be clear about that, that we do have that right and that responsibility if a person doesn't want to go forward criminally, but we have this greater concern about the risk to our campus that we will take action.
Okay, you're talking about this mandatory reporting, and that was as of last year.
Yes.
Why did you all decide to go to that? Because some victims may feel like, wow, I feel a little betrayed.
Yeah.
What is the stand that the university is taking in regards then to sexual assault? What message are they trying to send by having mandatory reporting on behalf of faculty and staff?
It is a tough situation, and a lot of times faculty, staff, you know, and as I mentioned, graduate assistants have good relationships with students, and a student might feel very comfortable confiding in someone. So what we would ask in that instance is that faculty, staff, or graduate assistant, that they let the person know, I have a responsibility to report. I can't guarantee confidentiality about what you're going to tell me. And if you decide to share this with me, know that I need to report. And so the second part of that question that you asked is really why. And from the university perspective, our first and foremost concern is for the safety of our students. And in order for us to respond and to act on this information, we have to know it. And we actually, under Title IX, have a responsibility to respond when we know or we should have known that an incident occurred. So that is a very vast, expansive responsibility. And the only way we can fulfill that is if someone finds out they need to report it.
In terms of the new sexual misconduct policy that you put in place last year, how does this line up with what other campuses are doing across the country and right here in the state of Michigan?
Just in terms of talking with peers at other institutions and looking at research that I've done. And it seems that people are moving towards this one policy, one process model that is the best practice at this point in time. And, you know, 10 years ago, 5 years ago, the best practice was a hearing panel. So these things, you know, come in waves and they're based on legislation and regulations in the field. But there's peers across the state that still do hearing panels. There's some that do a blended model where they do an individual investigation and a hearing. There's just multiple formats. I think people are trying to figure it out. The government hasn't necessarily mandated a process that everyone must follow. So we're looking at each other and trying to understand what works best for the individual campuses that we have.
Let's talk about prevention. What type of prevention measures are on campus at Western? For sexual assault?
There's quite a few. We have in our Office of Health Promotion and Syndicuse Health Center, they do a great job in working with our students, and they have been for years in terms of prevention. One of the things that we do that's our most systematic approach is we have online training that's required for all first-year students. So they would take about a 1 hour or so long module on preventing harassment on Title IX, what their rights are, healthy sexual relationships. This process has been in place for at least 2 years now. We have very good response rate with students taking that module. So that's a great prevention effort. And again, that's expansive. We did this year, just very recently, decided to expand that module so that all students can take it. So undergraduate and graduates can now take that online module. But apart from that, the way the Office of Health Promotion offers their prevention education is that they do it in various ways. So there's bystander intervention that they've done. They do a lot of peer education. They have various programs that they offer throughout the year on healthy sexual behavior, on really looking at the risks of alcohol and avoiding and mitigating alcohol risks. So they do quite a bit. And of course, you're asking about sexual assault in alcohol. You know, I'm talking about that. But we know that there's certainly a relationship between sexual assault, alcohol use, and other drugs. So that I would really count the work that they're doing in that area as being very helpful with sexual assault prevention as well.
Ms. Crawford, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
We've been talking to Western Michigan University Title IX Director Felicia Crawford about the university's updated sexual misconduct policy. For a longer interview, visit WMUK.org. For West Southwest on WMUK, I'm Earlene McMichael.